Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Thursday, December 15th. I'm Ray Graff. Joining us once again to answer your automotive questions is Gordon Fricke, owner and operator of Barber & Fricke Automotive in Hoosick Falls, New York. We welcome your calls right now at 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. You can also email the program, voxpop@wamc.org. This is always a popular show, and we try to get through as many calls as we can. We always leave somebody on the line. If you don't want to be that person, call early, 800-348-2551. Gordon Fricke is here. We'll talk cars, put another log on the fire if you have a fire. If not, just turn the heat up in your car and get ready for an hour of infotainment. It begins after the news. Good afternoon. Welcome back to Vox Pop on a very chilly Thursday afternoon. I'm Ray Graff. We're talking automotive maintenance and repair this afternoon with Gordon Fricke, who is owner and operator of Barber & Fricke Automotive Incorporated in Hoosick Falls, New York. Gordon has been in the auto repair and service industry for over 30 years, and if you've listened to this program, he knows quite a bit about engines and cars in general. So now's your time to call with your question, 800-348-2551. 800-348-2551 is our telephone number. Yeah, you can also email the program, voxpop@wamc.org, and we'll get to as many emails as we can, as we will with the calls. Once the calls start flowing in, the lines get loaded. If you hear somebody hang up, that's the time to call. Otherwise, you know, if you're left on the line at the end, I warned you. Get in now. Our number is 800-348-2551. Gordon Fricke, welcome back to the show.
Thank you very much.
And who's this other person who's
here? Well, you know, I just happened to, spur of the moment, realize that my daughter Emma was around this afternoon, and she decided to stop in with us.
And share your pain.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, welcome aboard, Emma. Nice to have you here. How's the winter going for you?
It's going well so far.
Now, I understand. I've done some research that on you, and apparently you have a perfectly spotless driving record. Amazing.
Yeah, so far.
Boy, that's something you want to be very careful of.
I know, knock on
advertising, because that can change very quickly.
She was very proud about that.
Yeah. Yeah. I am.
Yeah.
Well, no speeding tickets or anything.
You're very young, mind you.
Yeah, 22, so.
Things will, you don't get too upset when that first little fender bender happens.
Oh, don't even talk about it, right?
Well, you know somebody who can fix it, right?
It's true. Convenient for me.
Yeah, cold weather, always a drag. How long do you warm up your car before you
head? Well, you know, there's a lot of talk about how much to warm your car up. And some of the, quote, experts or the manufacturers don't recommend letting it run for 15 or 20 minutes. They say start it, let everything get going for maybe 30 seconds to a minute, and then drive away slowly and let everything warm up and limber up. But, you know, I like to get into a warm car.
Boy, you're right about that.
So I let mine run for 10 or 15 minutes, so it's nice and warm when I get in it.
Any problems, any potential problems from that? Why would the manufacturers not say that other than the government says, well, let's not tell people to do that?
Well, you know, that's interesting you say that. A part of that is, of course, emissions, letting cars and engines run a long time unnecessarily.
Yeah.
Also, a lot of idling is not that good for the engine. Contaminants go in the oil. Is it chronic or bad news? Well, if you start your car every day, let it run for an hour, drive it for 5 minutes and come home, yeah, that'll accumulate and be bad, and you'll have deposits in your oil and moisture in the crankcase and all that. But letting it run for, you know, 5-10 minutes and get warmed up, I don't think is a bad thing, providing you're keeping up with all your maintenance and changing the oil when you should.
No, I don't know about you, but there have been times in my life where I had to jump in a car and get somewhere fast in the middle of winter. What is the shortest duration that is recommended to warm up a vehicle? In other words, you don't just turn it on and go when it's 0 degrees.
When it's 0 degrees, you just think about how thick all of your lubricants are. If you've ever poured oil when it's zero out, it's very thick and slow. It's like honey.
Yeah.
So your transmission, your engine, your brake fluid, which is a much thinner liquid, but all of those things are heavy, thick, and ice cold and don't want to move around as quickly as they are expected to. So if it's zero, you start that thing up, throw it in gear, and put it to the floor, you could have some trouble. You could have some issues with the transmission. The engine could starve slightly for oil. So to answer your question, minimum, I think it would want to be sitting there running at least 30 seconds to a minute to get everything flowing and moving.
Once the engine's on, it warms up pretty quickly.
It does. It does. Yeah, but it doesn't want to go racetrack mode, you know, as soon as you drive away.
Well, the phone lines are loading up here at 800-348-2551. If you have a question for Gordon or Emma, let's go to Beverly in Millbrook. Beverly, you're on.
Hi, this is Beverly. Good afternoon, Gordon and Emma. I have a question about my 2010 Honda Element.
Sure.
I have 122,000 miles on it. And there's really never been anything significant wrong with it. I do all the oil changes on time. The dealer thinks I should just go there and, because it says so, get a new timing belt and a water pump. And that kind of goes against everything I learned about my cars since the late 70s. We would replace the water pump or the belt when it broke or the pump leaked. So what could you tell me about that?
Yes, yes. So the recommendation there is timing belts are a critically important component in your engine. And it is a belt with teeth on it, and it's made out of rubber and other synthetic materials and things in there that reinforce it. But it is subject to wear, cracking, and eventually it could break.
And that would be very bad.
Extremely bad, because all engines today, or practically all of them, are under such close tolerances. They're called interference engines. So if that timing belt fails, the pistons keep moving and the valves stop. So the pistons will slam into any of the open valves and do heavy, heavy engine damage. So the belt simply just needs to be replaced at a predetermined interval so it doesn't get driven too long and it fail. So that's part one of your question. The other part was the water pump. And on a lot of engines, and Hondas in particular, the water pump is driven by this very belt that we're speaking of. So the water pump acts as a pulley to keep that belt running in the correct spot in addition to turning the water pump. So again, it's just a maintenance item. Replace it before it even remotely fails. Did that answer your question?
So I shouldn't be waiting for a leak in the water pump like I used to with my other cars.
No, it needs to be done at that predetermined mileage or time interval.
Now, does Beverly have a chain or a belt?
Well, that's the other thing I was going to ask. Beverly, the year again of the car?
It's a 2010, and it's an EX.
It's an Element?
It's an Element.
Honda,
yes.
Element.
They don't make them anymore. Yeah.
Now, Honda, most of their engines did switch to timing chains, as Ray was speaking of, and the chains they didn't require any maintenance or changes. I thought by 2010, most all Hondas were not belt engines anymore.
Ah.
So you should, and again, your dealer recommended this. Is that correct?
My dealer recommended it at my last service interval, and it surprised me. And he did say chains, so that surprised me, too.
Oh, okay. Well, see, there's a major difference between chain and belt. And I think your Honda by that time is a chain engine.
Well, why would the dealer recommend it?
Well, that's what I think. There might be some misunderstanding as to what they were recommending or what's under the hood of that vehicle. But I'm going to say that's a chain engine, because all Hondas by 10 had gone to chains.
But you want to double check that.
I would definitely be 100% sure that they were recommending the correct thing for your specific vehicle.
Okay, and even at a chain, does a chain require an intervention to replace it at 100 or 200?
No, the chain is basically a internal component lubricated by engine oil that doesn't require any maintenance or changing until it shows trouble or signs.
And how will you know?
Well,
you warp the engine?
Noises, rattling, you know, there'll be some signs that there's something going on. Check engine light could come on because the cam timing can't be maintained anymore.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Beverly, thanks a lot. Noises and lights, that's all I have in my vehicle, so how would I know the difference?
Well, how about new noises and new lights? Not the ones
you're... No, I get a new one every day. Yeah.
So you're accustomed to some.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, I won't even tell you. Well, you know what it is. It's a piece of junk. Let's go to Tanya in Del Mar. Tanya, you're on.
Hello.
Hello.
It's time for snow tires, and I'm cheap. So I'm trying to find out if it's safe and practical for me to just to get two. And if so, should I put them on the front of the vehicle or the back of the vehicle?
Yeah, wonderful question, because for years or decades, I was accustomed to European cars that it was always recommended to put four snow tires on the car. So all ends of the car are receiving the same traction from the same type of tire. Today, just about everything is front-wheel drive. Is your car front-wheel or all-wheel drive?
Yeah, don't know.
What kind of car is it?
It's a 2014 Jetta S.
Okay, yeah, that is front-wheel drive. So
okay.
If you put only snow tires on your front wheels, your front end is going to out-traction the back end. So when the roads get really slippery, the tendency is going to be for your front end to grip and your back end to slip. So that's going to put your back end sliding around sideways. The short answer is you need to put all four snow tires on that car.
Okay.
There you go.
Would it be different if it was all four-wheel drive?
No, not really. All-wheel drive offers you better traction, but it doesn't help in stopping and steering. So the recommendation on cars today is all four corners get snow tires.
Okay.
Thanks, Tanya.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. What about rear-wheel drive?
Well, you know, the olden days, Riviera, Le Mans, Chevelle, rear-wheel drive, big, heavy engine up front, conventional system back in the 50s, 60s, 70s. The wisdom then was to put snow tires on the back, and most people didn't put snow tires on the front.
Right.
The front end was really heavy, and the back end was relatively light, and there was a lot of power going to those back wheels.
Yeah.
So people survived with snows on the back, and providing you had really good tires up front, you got by.
Right.
But even in those days, it would have been beneficial to put four snow tires on those cars.
Back in the day, we put studs on the tires.
Absolutely. Well, those cars were terrible in snow.
They were
too much power and not a lot of weight in the back.
Studded tires, though, you never had a problem.
Well, they were good. They helped.
They ripped up the roads, though, I guess.
Yeah, and you still can get them. It's just not quite as popular as it used to be.
And you have to take them off, I think, in spring.
Yeah, there's dates of on date and off date.
Let's take a break here. Gordon Fricke is our guest. We talk automotive maintenance and repair every month or so, and today is that day. 800-348-2551. We'll be right back.
Support comes from HMT at the Spa Little Theater, presenting A Charlie Brown Christmas, weekends through December 18th at the Spa Little Theater, Saratoga Spa State Park, homemadetheater.org. The Waldorf School of Saratoga Springs, giving children the education and tools for the challenges of an ever-changing world, waldorfsaratoga.org. Stavros, helping people with disabilities achieve their dreams. Offices in Amherst, Greenfield, and Springfield, stavros.org for more information. Vermont Coffee Company, offering slow-roasted organic coffee in the brown paper bag at local grocery stores. Vermont Coffee Company, coffee roasted for friends. And Identity Eyewear, Albany, New York, specializing in distinctive eyewear including Zenka from Paris and Coco Song from Italy. Eye exams by appointment, 518-459-2638.
Oh, we're on. Oh, thank you, Jordan. We appreciated that. I don't know how much of that conversation went over the air. 800-348-2551. Yeah, I'll give you the cue next time when the mic goes on. A couple of emails, Gordon Fricke, and then back to the phones. This one's from Paul in North Adams. I have a 10-year-old Dodge Caravan with 223,000 miles on it, going strong. Yesterday, the heater blower fan didn't come on, regardless of the speed setting. This was after a routine oil change, but I can't imagine a trip to the mechanic had anything to do with it. Oh, really? Later, however, it came on normally. Is it ready to be replaced? Is that something I can do myself? Also, I have a minor coolant leak. Have to add a little every 4 to 6 weeks. Are the stop leak products useful? So a couple of questions there.
Yeah, well, the heat is a good question coming up starting today.
Yeah.
It's possible that the blower motor's on its way out. And they can stop working and then start working again. And if it's affecting all of his speeds, instead of just, let's say, speeds 1, 2, and 3 don't work, but 4 does.
Yeah.
If you had to take a stab at it, if it's not failed at the time, it could very well be his blower motor. Can he change it? I think on that vehicle, it's not too bad to get to. The location on some blower motors is absolutely horrible. Others are pretty much out in the open.
It's a 2006 Caravan, I think.
Yeah. So if he does a little bit of research as to where it's located, you know, if you can get online and get some help, that could be a task that he can handle. And the other question was...
The coolant leak.
Yeah.
Every 4 to 6 weeks.
Yeah. If it's nothing obvious that's dripping on the ground that you're seeing, yes, there are some sealants or cooling system conditioners, they like to call them, that you can pour in there that is not going to plug everything up and be harmful.
But you don't want to overuse it, right?
You don't want to overuse it. And you just want to start out very mild. And believe it or not, Subaru has a cooling system conditioner that is a liquid. You shake it up and pour it in. And it does it. I use it on a lot of cars because Subaru puts it in as a preventive measure.
Yeah.
Doesn't plug up anything. It's not harmful. And it'll take care of these little teeny seeps, little teeny leaks that you can't pinpoint.
Yeah.
So, yes, the answer to that question, yes, but don't overdo it and don't use big, powerful stuff.
All right, this one's from Matt. I have a 2011 Mitsubishi Lancer all-wheel drive turbo with SST transmission, and at a cruise low RPM it whines. When at higher RPM the whining goes away. Sound comes from mid-cab area. Any suggestions?
Boy, that's a tough one to pinpoint without driving the car, listening to it. What I always try to do is ask the owner if they can make the noise occur without the car moving. Just by bringing the engine speed up to the point where it makes the sound on the road.
Yeah.
Let's say the TAC is at 2,000 RPMs is when it does it all the time. See if you can do that without moving. And if that noise will reproduce itself at 2,000, you've totally eliminated your drivetrain.
Oh, you make
now
a
it's
point.
An engine noise, a belt noise, a pulley noise, something like that.
That's a good idea. This one is from Bradley, who says, I have been researching a Chevy Volt vigorously, and there aren't many people with issues. Any experience with the car? I'm looking to get one pre-owned.
Yeah, I have no experience with them.
Okay, you know, well, that says something in itself, right?
Well, they're not out in big numbers.
Okay.
And my experience with hybrids in general, the Volts, I think, pure electric, but there's not that many of them out there in giant numbers, and they stick to the dealer for all the maintenance and service for a long time.
Is it all electric? I'm not sure. The Volt.
I think it is more electric than it is hybrid, and I don't know what the status of the car is, if it's a full plug-in electric or I think there is an onboard engine on there, but I'm not sure. Like I said, I don't see them at all.
Okay. Back to the phones we go. Gordon Fricke, our guest, 800-348-2551 is the telephone number. Kat in Johnstown. Kat, you're on.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a car that I purchased, and it does not have a spare, a spare tire, but it did come with the tires, I believe they're called run flats, something where they don't go flat, correct. And I was out of town, and I had a flat tire, which could not be repaired. So I went to a tire place and they showed me the wear plate on the tire and recommended that I needed 4 new tires. So I thought, well, as long as I'm here, I've got the 4 new tires. And then when I returned home and went to the dealership car for regular maintenance, they told me I had the incorrect tires, that I would have to purchase new tires, the run flats, for $1,200. Right. So my question is this. Now I have no backup. I have no spare. I have tires that if it's going to go flat, it's just going to go flat immediately. I really... I'm not sure what to do.
What kind of car?
I just don't know what to do with it.
What kind of car is it, Kat?
It's a Mercedes GLA.
Okay.
2015.
Yeah. A lot of vehicles today come without a spare.
And
some have run flats and others don't. And I have switched vehicles from run flats to conventional tires, but with a long discussion with the owner that they really want to do that, and that that there's no spare tire now, and you know, you're up to, if you have a flat, you're in big trouble. Some people have elected to get a wheel, tire, jack, and wrench and put them in the back of the car, which takes up a bunch of space.
Yeah.
When you got your new tires, was there talk about removing run flats and putting on non-run flat tires?
No. There was no discussion about this.
Okay.
And actually, I had forgotten about the fact that the tires were run flat.
Yeah.
And they were not to me upfront about it.
Yeah.
If they had said to me, you know, we can get these tires, but we'll put something on for now, but when you get home, we can get these, I would have been fine with that.
Yeah. Yeah. And any
they weren't.
Any experienced tire shop will know the difference, because it says run flat all
Absolutely.
Over them, and they're very stiff and very heavy. They're harder to change than a conventional tire. But in any case, at this point, that's water over the dam. But so
yeah.
your options now would be, at the very least, carry a couple of cans of Fix-A-Flat, the inflator, the tire inflator Fix-A-Flat, so you've got at least
right.
something. If you get a nail and the tire goes soft, your low tire warning light will come on, and you could potentially spray the stuff in there and get you home.
Right.
Getting a spare and a jack and all that equipped on that car would be a big deal, I think. Probably pretty expensive and take up a lot of space. But yeah, so no, you're in kind of a spot there. So,
oh boy,
yeah, definitely fix a flat. Maybe a little 12-volt compressor that clamps to the battery and can reinflate a tire. Roadside assistance. Make sure you have AAA or something like that, because you definitely can't. You can't be out in the middle of nowhere with a flat and no help. So
make a point.
Yeah, right. Yeah, it's awful that a lot of these cars are no spare now.
Tell me about this other stuff. Now, fix a flat is one thing. My brother tells me that there is another thing. I have a tire. I bought new tires not too long ago. And because, I guess, the rims are rough.
They get corroded.
And so even one of these new tires got last summer, starting to go flat. Every week to 10 days, I have to put some air in it.
Yeah.
He says there's this goo, kind of goo.
Slime.
So how do you do it? And does it work?
Well, yes, it does. It's more common to be using, and it is called slime. It's thick, gooey stuff, but it's more for off-road, lawnmowers, wheelbarrows, ATVs, things like that. You don't want to put it in a modern tire, particularly with tire pressure sensors, because it can goo and plug them up. What I would do in your case is, the leak is probably between the wheel and the tire itself.
Yeah.
And we run into this constantly. You have to take the tire off. You have to clean the rim, get the corrosion off or down to a bare minimum, and then either put a sealer around it or a vegetable-based grease that we use that keeps the corrosion from coming back and
really?
Seals the tire to the wheel. And I would fix it the right way rather than spray goo in
so
there.
So no go on the slime, huh?
I don't know. Fix a flat that's acceptable with tire pressure sensors is okay.
But that won't last.
It can, because it's in the tire all the time. It's
so
always rolling.
It's not fully flat. If I were to use Fix-A-Flat, don't you have to have a fully flat tire
to
use that?
Well, yeah, you need the tire to be deflated so the liquid goes in the tire when you spray it. So yes, you'd have to let some air out.
How much?
Quite a bit. You know, till you saw it being looking flat, and then squirt the can in there, then get your pressure back up to normal. But
so, I thought the Fix-A-Flat also inflated the tire.
It does. It does both. It does. It inflates it and puts a liquid in there, a sealing liquid.
Very interesting.
Yep.
Well, I guess we better get back to the calls. Enough about me. Stuart in Newburgh. Stuart, you're on.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my call. I have a 2003 F-150 with about 189,000, 190,000 miles on it. And, you know, I'm a sculptor. I use it for work. I do carry heavy stuff in it, but it's mostly highway miles, I'd say. Last summer, I had a U-joint that needed to be replaced. It was slapping a lot, so I replaced the U-joint. And unfortunately, last week, that was replaced upstate. And then last week, I was in Brooklyn and the BQE, and car started to vibrate, pulled off. The U-joint broke, drive shaft hit the ground, got towed. They replaced the U-joint, then they called me and said the drive shaft was cracked. Then I picked it up, and it turned out the tailpiece on the tranny was cracked.
Ooh.
And then I brought it back, and they said they replaced that, and they said, well, the actual case on the tranny is cracked. So now it went from a couple hundred to 650, is now close to 3,000.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of wondering, you know, the truck runs well, the engine works fine. I've done some, you know, work on it, replace an alternator, this U-joint thing. But basically, brakes, you know, oil, you know, it's been a reliable car. But, you know, when do you make that decision?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. A lot of people reach that point, and there's never a perfect time. I personally have had a vehicle that, okay, I'm going to drive this another year, and I need to put XYZ in it, radiator, brakes, water pump, timing belt, whatever. And then that next year, everything else goes wrong.
Yeah.
So it's kind of hard to predict. What you need to do is get an assessment of the condition that the vehicle is in now. How good is everything else looking forward? And you can't predict everything, but if you're not going to need tires, you're not going to need a water pump, you're not going to...
I replaced the tires last year.
Yeah.
I mean, the water pump, who knows? I mean,
yeah, you don't,
probably
you don't
I will
know.
Have to replace it,
yeah.
Right?
You don't know. So you have to weigh what the vehicle's worth to you. Fix. In other words, if you've got to put $3,000 or $4,000 into it, versus what will it cost you to replace the vehicle with a suitable vehicle that you know nothing about, and what's that going to cost? Is that going to cost $8,000, $9,000, $12,000? It may be you may be further ahead fixing this vehicle, and you know what you've got, and you're back on the road. So. It's kind
I mean,
of
that's my inclination.
Yeah.
You know, and the mechanic who has it now is that's what he says, you know.
It makes sense. And Click and Clack always used to say the same thing. Don't really be overly concerned about what the vehicle's current value is. Think about what it's going to cost you to replace it and what it's
right,
going to cost you to fix
vehicle.
It. Unless you're buying a new vehicle, if you buy another like, kind, and quality vehicle, you might be needing all kinds of stuff within the next year. So, you know, it sounds like a lot of money, but in that respect, it may be wiser to fix what you've got.
One thing you sure don't want is the drivetrain to hit the ground on the BQE again.
No, that's bad
news. Right. Well, you know, it actually, I had just gotten off. I had pulled off on the exit when it broke. So I was going only 1 or 2 miles an hour when it broke, but that's what it is.
New York drivers are very tolerant about that sort of thing, so I'm sure
they're very, no, really. People, like, stopped, and they offered me cookies. It was
right. Well, good luck, man.
So one more question. The U-joint that was replaced last summer, you know, the first one lasted 189,000 miles.
Yep.
The last one lasted about 500 miles.
Yep.
Nothing I can do because it's 6 months old?
Well, a lot of times it has to do with the quality of the U-joint, the skill of the guy changing it, and the condition of the drive shaft that it's going in. A lot of drive shafts are made out of aluminum now. And
this is steel.
Yeah. The yokes where the U-joints get pressed into can get bent and warped.
That's what it looks like broke, actually.
Yeah.
That's what it looked like to be broke.
Yeah. And it's possible that the U-joint came out so incredibly hard that it took some shock in changing it, and the guy didn't know it when he changed it, but it tweaked it, you know?
Yeah. All right, well, thank you for that call. We appreciate it. Let's go over to Chuck in Dutchess County. Chuck, you're on with Gordon Frick.
Hello. Can you hear me?
Oh, yes, indeed.
Oh, hello. Sorry about that.
That's all right.
Thanks for taking my call. Yes, I've got a 2004 Jeep Wrangler, actually, and it was overheating, and the thermostat wasn't blowing any heat, so we guessed it might have been the thermostat control, what do you call those, that controls the heat, so the antifreeze going into the engine.
Yeah, thermostat, yep.
Thermostat, right? So we changed that by ourselves, pretty easy, actually. But it really didn't solve the problem. I was wondering if you had any suggestions of what else we should be looking at.
So what are the symptoms now, Chuck? You can't get any heat?
Right. Well, we can't get any heat, but it does still overheat.
Oh, it's still overheating. Okay. And when when it does overheat, is this happening when you're in motion 40, 50, 60 miles an hour? Or is this when you're sitting at idle or in slow traffic?
Actually, it overheats when we're moving, and then if you stop, it stops overheating.
So it's a thing that happens while you're in motion. And it's how many miles on the vehicle?
I've got about 120,000 on it.
Yeah. overheating issues can be difficult to pinpoint, especially when you're, it's an issue when you're moving, not stopped or going slow. If you're stopped or going slow, you always want to be concerned about a fan not working. You can always have a clogged or restricted radiator, but that usually shows up in warmer weather rather than now. But you'll want to check the condition of the coolant, if the radiator is getting clogged. The water pump basically works or it doesn't. You know, the impeller doesn't usually fall off. On some vehicles they can, but it'll overheat immediately and it'll never keep its cool again. So I think you got to bring it in, and they've got to do some checking to see what kind of shape the cooling system's in.
All right, Chuck, thank you very much for that. Over to Mike in East Greenbush. Mike, you're on.
Hi, good afternoon.
Hi.
I'd like to make a comment about the Chevy Volt.
All right.
I've got a friend who has one, and she loves it. She's retired. The car has got about 140 miles between charges, so she's very seldom hears the motor run.
So it's mostly
like
electric.
It's electric, yeah.
Fully electric?
It's got a motor.
It does, okay.
But it's good, like I say, for 140 miles between charges, supposedly. So
splendid.
She never hears the motor. The only thing I don't like about it, when the car pulls up next to you, it's absolutely silent.
Yeah.
It's kind of disconcerting.
That's becoming an issue, and they're actually trying to legislate sound being brought into electric and hybrid cars, seriously.
Little speaker?
Yes, because pedestrians and people can't hear them, and they're getting hit by them.
Huh?
Yes.
Yeah,
okay.
I've had a couple of ladies that have those electric cars, and they're absolutely silent.
Yeah.
It's a little creepy.
Yeah.
Okay, I've got a 09 Tacoma, 57,000 miles, and it's kind of popping between first and second gear when I'm slowing down. Say you're coming into a traffic circle or a parking lot, you're going down about 15 miles an hour, you let up on the gas, go back to step on the gas, and it'll kind of pop on me. Have you heard anything about these kind of vehicles or these kind of problems?
Is this a manual or an automatic transmission?
Automatic.
It's an automatic. And when you say pop, is it just a sound, or are you feeling something?
I'm feeling the car. It's shifting hard.
And it's only going decelerating and then touching the gas again?
Right. Even now, it started the past couple of days, just coming into if I'm coming in a little hard into a stop sign or a traffic light and hitting the brake a little hard, it'll pop in about 5-10 miles an hour.
And it's a Tacoma, you said?
Yep.
Yeah. It's possible that there's some slop in the drivetrain, universal joint, drive shaft, that kind of thing.
I've had those checked out.
Have you? Yeah.
Yep.
I mean, it could be an issue within the transmission, but it's going to take somebody that's able to determine that in the vehicle with you and experience it exactly when it happens. You know, somebody's going to have to go with you, and you're going to have to demonstrate that exact time when it does it.
And then the problem will go away.
It'll never surface when the person's in the car. It happens to me
exactly
all the time.
I had the guy check it out a couple of days ago, and he had a scanner on it, and nothing showed up.
Yeah, no, I've been on lots of test drives. Yeah, and the problem that does occur never happens when I'm there.
Mike, we got to take a break here. I appreciate the call. 800-348-2551 is our number. Gordon Fricke is our guest. We hit the home stretch in a moment.
Support comes from Rhinebeck Artist Shops, Rhinebeck, New Paltz, Kingston. 40 years of providing professional picture framing, fine art materials, and holiday art sets, stocking stuffers, and materials for young artists. RhinebeckArt.com. Union Gables Mansion Inn, Saratoga Springs, providing hotel amenities and historic bed and breakfast setting with a heated pool, wraparound porches, and private balconies. UnionGables.com. Real Seafood Company, Wolf Road Colony, locally owned seafood restaurant and raw bar. RealSeafoodCo.com. Envision Excel Eye Care, Lake Katrine, Eye Exams, Eye Care, Dry Eye Therapy, and now New American Made Frames, where eyewear is an art. VisionExcelEyeCare.com.
Vox Pop on WAMC, Ray Graff with you, and Gordon Fricke is our guest today, and a shout out once again.
Yes, real quick to my daughter. Hannah.
Hang on, let's turn that microphone on. Yeah, you got to turn that microphone on. No, it's not on.
Hello.
Testing 1, 2, 3.
Anybody there?
Yeah, why don't you turn it on? Yeah, turn the on button. There we go.
Oh, there we go.
There you go.
That sounds better. Sounded like I was going deaf for a second.
That's fine.
A quick shout out to my daughter, Hannah, who is in Freiburg, Germany, finishing her semester abroad. She's traveling home this weekend. So I want to wish her safe travels.
And how is the knee, Hannah?
Well, that's a good question.
She hurt her knee the last time, right?
She hurt her knee. We spoke about it a little bit on one of the shows, and her sister happens to be here with me today.
Yes.
And they were together when this occurred on a trampoline in...
It's a public trampoline in Germany.
Yeah, have you ever heard of that?
Well, no. Not here, obviously, the land of many lawyers.
Yeah, exactly.
That wouldn't happen. Well, I hope she's doing well, and nice to have you listening online, which anybody can do at WAMC.org. Any message?
Gute Reise.
Ah.
Have a good trip.
Gute Reise, very nice. All right, back to the phones we go. Jesse and Troy. Jesse, you're on.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
I have a 2001 Honda Civic, and... the heater only blows hot when I'm moving. Like, come to a stop sign, or if I try to heat the car up in the morning, it just blows out cold air. Any idea where I should start?
Yep. So you have to have the engine speed up to get heat. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. So at idle, it's still blowing, but it's blowing out cold air.
So if you're sitting at idle, let's say you're in park or neutral, and you speed the engine up to, let's say, 2,000 RPMs on the tach, you'll probably get heat back, I'm guessing, correct?
Have you tried that, actually.
Yeah, try
no,
that.
I've not tried that.
And if you are, then that tells me basically two things. Number one, you're low on coolant, and the water pump can't supply it to the heater. The heater tends to be a little higher in the vehicle than other components. So coolant level needs to be checked immediately. And possibly the heater core is getting partially clogged, and at slow engine speeds, the water pump's not turning very fast. It's not pushing a lot of hot water into your heater core. So level and possible partial plugging of the heater core is what's happening there.
Okay.
Is there a way to clean the heater core, or is that just a replacement?
No, they can be flushed. Yeah. Well, a lot of times if the coolant looks perfect, we'll just disconnect the hoses that go to the heater and flush it backwards.
Hot water?
Hot water out of your garden hose type thing. We do it in the shop. And flush it both ways, and usually it's some junk comes out of it. And most of the time, it restores the heat pretty nicely.
All right, Jesse, thank you so much for the call. Over to Montague, New Jersey, and John is on. John, go ahead.
Yes, good afternoon, gentlemen. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I was commenting on warming your car up in the morning. It was 18 degrees here this morning.
Yeah.
I don't think it's much warmer than that now.
Yeah, well, it hasn't warmed up that much. It's about 20. But I've got a 2012 Jeep Liberty, and I will not move that car until the temperature gauge comes up to at least halfway. Just give it a break. Let it warm up a little bit, because the fluids in there are not honey. They're kind of molasses, and you got to give it a little bit of a break, and I think the car will be good to you.
Sound reasonable to you?
Yes.
I don't know what your comments are on that.
Yeah, no, I do agree to let things warm up more than just 30 seconds or a minute or two. I like to have all my components limbered up and ready to go rather than hop in ice cold and take off. So good idea.
John, thanks a lot. My rule of thumb is, in general, when I have time, not to get it halfway, but if the heat meter needle moves up to the point where it's at sea, not at the bottom, but it just moves up enough, I've seen motion, I think it's warm enough.
Yes, if it's coming out of the cold zone, maybe let's say quarter of the range, you're in pretty good shape. You can start going.
All right, let's go to Paul in Greenfield Center. Paul, you're on.
Well, thank you. I have a 1998 Dodge Ram 1500 Laramie, and I had a mechanic tell me that it was okay to put some heavy-duty springs in the back of the truck because I carry a lot of weight in the back of the truck. Now he's suggesting that I put heavier springs in the front of it because I want to put a plow on it. And do you recommend putting the 2500 series springs in the front of a 1500 truck to give it more steadier stability for a plow?
Yeah, if you are going to add a snow plow, it's going to add a lot of weight. So the front springs will definitely need to be beefed up, because if you raise the plow, it's going to really squat that nose.
I agree with that. But I do have one more particular problem with the truck. I love this truck. It's only got 185,000 miles on it. It runs great, but there's no heat.
None.
I mean, well, when it's about 60, 50, 40, 30, you start losing the heat. When it gets to be this temperature, there's no heat in the truck at all. But what's happening is when you drive it down the road, and let's say you start going up a hill, the fan's still running, but there's nothing coming out of the vents. And then when you let up on the throttle, everything comes back again. Could that be a vacuum leak inside the dashboard?
Yeah, yeah. Though that vintage vehicle had vacuum controls that went to your heater controls. And
right. When
you're hard on the throttle, you're losing most of your vacuum and your controls kind of go into neutral. And you let back up on the gas, the vacuum comes back and your controls start to work again. It's more than likely there's a check valve bad between the firewall and the heater controls that keeps that vacuum from bleeding off. So, yeah, it's definitely a vacuum issue.
Sounds like a cheap fix.
It probably will be. It's probably going to be the check valve that's in that vacuum hose.
You really don't want you don't want to go plowing if you don't have heat, unless you plow in the summer, which would be fine.
Yeah, it's good to have heat in a plow truck.
I think that's a great idea.
Because usually you're out in cold.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. All right. So, okay, we've solved that one. Let's go to Matthew in Cheshire, Mass. Matthew, you're on.
Hi. How's it going? I have a question. You guys were talking about snow tires earlier. I was curious how he feels about chains or cables.
How does he feel about chains?
Well, if you have a big truck and you're going over a mountain pass, you have to have them.
Yes.
But on cars,
a rear-wheel drive 2006 Buick LaCerne.
You know, tire. Yes, you can put cables.
Trying to save some money in, because the tires are a lot more expensive than chains would be.
The only thing with the chains or the cables, you have to take them on and put them off. You can't go.
Yeah.
You can't commute with chains on a car.
Because I was told it's like driving on square tires when you're on regular conditions.
Yes, and if you're trying to go 65 miles an hour, those chains are not going to stay on the car. They're going to rip everything to pieces. They're an emergency device that you can put on to get over a mountain pass or get unstuck or drive through very deep snow.
Like commute in bad weather, like we have recently had a couple of the storms and stuff, my car kind of slips and slides. So I was thinking that would be worthwhile, and I wouldn't mind the extra labor for saving a few bucks. But
they're an emergency device only. I wouldn't be relying on those. I would, in the case of your car, that car's not too good in snow because of the spec size tires that are on it. So you're really going to be in the neighborhood for tires, snow tires.
Now, if you had a rear wheel drive vehicle, could you put skis on the front tires?
Ford did it.
Really?
Yeah, model.
You're kidding me.
T or Model A. This was for off road use, but yes, they made a conversion for Model T's or A's that put giant skis on the front, and it actually had a track kit in the rear. So
brilliant.
It was, yeah.
Okay, so can I get this as an add-on for my minivan?
Well,
oh, it's front-wheel drive. That won't work.
You can get a track kit for your Pathfinder.
Oh,
it's
like
only like $6,000
really?
To put four tracks
How
on
much
it.
Is the labor?
That's probably included. That's probably what
really?
The whole deal costs. Yeah.
All right, well, we won't do that. Let's go to George in Stanford. George, you're on.
Yeah, I think I can help. Is it Gordon? Yeah,
it is Gordon.
Yes.
The Chevy Volt, everybody seems to be a bit confused. All I did was read the advertisements in the magazines. It has an electric motor, but it also has a gasoline engine. And because the previous caller called it a motor.
Right.
Electric things are called motors, and a gas internal combustion is engine. The little engine is only to charge the batteries, so it can power the electric motor.
Splendid.
So that's what the Volt has. As far as distance, I don't
yeah.
know.
So that's good, because that helped answer the question, because it doesn't sound like it's a hybrid where the engine is propelling the transmission. It's simply charging the batteries to run the electric motor.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you have another question?
Yeah, but I have some other couple of things. The other thing is, I restored an Austin Healey 1966 before you were born, and
I was born.
I'm a disabled veteran, and I had to let it after many moons of using it. It's in beautiful condition, not Concours. But anyway, I had to let it sit for almost a whole year because of my personal situation. And I'm going to, you know, be starting it in the spring. But I was wondering, I thought it would be a good idea to take the plugs out and put in some oil in the cylinders since it hasn't had any lubrication. But the question I have is especially about Marvel Mystery Oil. It's I don't know what you think about that. I mean, I have a 2014 Subaru Forester, and any new car I've had, they say never use any kind of special oils or additives, and I wouldn't do it in the Subaru, but this is a 1966 Austin Healey, and I just want to lubricate the upper cylinders when I first started it. What do you think about that? And then I have a follow-up related to that.
Sure. Well, it is a mystery. It's called Marvel Mystery Oil.
It is a mystery.
So nobody knows anything about it. No, it's just a very, very light, thin oil that can be put in your gasoline. It can be put in your crankcase. It'd be perfect for what you want to do. You can pour it in the spark plug holes and spin the engine over.
All right. Very, very quickly, your second question, George.
Yes. Well, actually, it's related to the winter issue we're all dealing with. There's a local gas station that provides, for more money, of course, a non-ethanol gas. And that raises the question of whether premium gas has additives in it that do the same thing as these, like, gas stabilizers that are supposed to counteract the effects of the ethanol. Or do you buy the non-ethanol gas? Is that good enough? Or do you use the additive? Or do you buy the premium that gas stations sell? I know they have non-NOC additives, but I don't know about anything to counteract the ethanol.
Okay.
What do you think about that?
So in terms of your Austin Healey, yes, it should have ethanol-free gasoline. It's going to be only available in 91 octane, which is fine. And, yes, you definitely should put a stabilizer in that gasoline as well. And that's the best bet for all of your old engines.
All right, George, thank you very much. Chris in Sandgate. Chris, you're on. You got to turn your radio down.
Hi, Emma and Gordon. Sorry, I just want to say I have a satellite telephone, and it will back up a little bit. I'm sorry about that.
Okay.
And Hannah in Freiburg, a beautiful town, which I think is the greenest city in the world.
Yes.
And the best trampolines, obviously.
Yes, right. Marvel's Mystery Oil, urban legend is that it is rendered pork fat. Anyway, I have an 88 Mercedes 300 SE, and this is kind of a Southpaw's version of a lot of the heat questions you've been getting. When I go down the street, it blows cold air. But if I'm, like, at the bus stop waiting for the goobers, I get all the heat I want. Why am I living in a backwards world?
Bizarro world.
Yeah, so the question is, of course, like the guy with the, I think it was a Honda, if you can get good heat by raising the engine RPMs to, let's say, 2,000 or 2,500 or 3,000, it's a flow or a level issue. If you're losing the heat when you're at speeds of 40, 50, 60, it could be that the heater core is getting restricted and can't provide enough heat. The cold air is overpowering its ability to heat it. So it's probably a heater core issue, as long as your coolant temp is where it should be. Well, that doesn't mean it has to be changed necessarily. You might be able to flush it.
As we spoke of a little bit ago.
Always try that first.
I did hear that. I did hear that, but I did not think of that. I was just thinking that, the water pump is going wicked fast, and they have this auxiliary motor that pushes water when you're idling, and that was working. I'll leave you guys alone. I know you got more calls, right?
Oh, we have a couple of more. Well, thank you very much, Chris. We appreciate it. All right, we only have about a minute here, about a minute and a half. Tom in Belchertown, you're on.
Yes, I was calling because I've got a 2003 Honda CR-V, and just yesterday the dashboard, the drive indicator, when you put the car in drive, started blinking, and I was wondering what that could be about.
Yeah, usually on most vehicles, that is the check transmission warning. So there could be an issue that the computer has determined could be a transmission problem, not necessarily a failure, but is the car shifting okay and working the way it normally does?
Yeah, no difference.
Yeah. What you should, and it, did it just do it this one time, or is it still flashing?
Just the whole day it was doing it.
It would be nice to get it scanned, get it plugged in, and just see what the event was, just to get a handle on what happened back then. And if it never occurs again, that's absolutely great, but could be the beginning of a problem that you might want to
tackle earlier rather than later.
Yeah, be up on, just to be prepared.
Okay.
All right.
Left him speechless. Well done, Tom. Good job, and we're out of time.
Well, it was a busy day, so we did it.
Gordon, good luck. Now, Emma, are you driving home?
I am.
You are? Mm-hmm. So, Gordon,
we came
good luck, man.
No, we met here in two cars.
Oh, you did? Yeah. Oh, okay.
So,
but I have a question for you, Dad. If I get in my car in the morning, I turn my heat on full blast, will my car warm up faster than if I just turn it on, like, regular?
You mean the fan speed?
Yes.
Will not
like
warm
everything,
up?
Like, everything, heat up full.
Won't warm up any
full.
Faster. All it's going to do is make a lot of wind.
Okay, and we got plenty of that here in Studio A. Well done. Thanks, Emma, for coming. Thanks, Gordon Fricke. Support comes from Boyden & Perrin, Amherst, Massachusetts, providing foreign and domestic car, truck, and SUV repair services at a Massachusetts inspection station for over 50 years, BoydenAndPerrin.com. Sage Wine and Spirits, Ballston Spa, New York, providing worldwide sustainable and organic wines and spirits, offering weekly tastings, sagewinespirits.com. At the University at Albany Theater Program, presenting student-centered theater in the Capital Region for over 100 years, albany.edu/theater. Thanks again to Gordon and Emma for being here today. Thanks to our engineer, Jordan Taylor. Our phones were answered by Deb Malik. Jim Lavoulis is our producer. Thank you for listening, and thank you for calling. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, it's Food Friday. Stand by now for news.